So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review
me. Do you believe that sexual harassment exists in your workplace?
I believe that there's a possibility of sexual harassment existing everywhere.
And I asked directly if it was
in
the World Wrestling Federation.
I don't want it in my organization. I don't want it.
I'd like to reiterate the question. Do you believe there is sexual harassment amongst the wrestlers or employees at the World Wrestling Federation today?
There is a possibility of that. That's why I have these independent investigators to come in.
And who are these independent investigators?
Fairfax Group Limited. And I would like, to hear what you have to say, and everyone has to say. I want to get to the bottom of it.
Would you therefore believe that because of all these allegations coming forward and more corroborating evidence proving that there's no doubt sexual harassment is running rampant in the World Wrestling Federation, that you are definitely going to come public and do something about it?
Why wouldn't I? If in fact that is the case, why wouldn't I do something about it? Why would I risk what we have?
Because you haven't done anything about it until it became public, because you thought it
was
underwater.
Because I had no knowledge of it.
I made knowledge of it to you when I was fired, and you just blew it off and let me go. I retained a lawyer.
Because you were not very good. You were not a very good announcer. You could not. It's the only reason why you were fired. You could not make the transition from radio to television. That is the only reason why you were fired.
I would like to remind you, sir, that I have a two-year contract.
2 years. You also have a clause in your contract that states, and as you know, you were hired on a trial basis.
I was not hired
you
on a trial
a
basis.
Do you not have a contract?
Mr. McMahon, I have a two-year deal
in
with your firm.
In that contract, you will note, in a clause, it states very clearly, and I have it outlined for all to see here today, that you can be fired almost at whim if, in fact, you're not doing a good job. You did a horrible job. That's the only reason why you were fired. That's it.
Maybe I should point out, first and foremost, that might be your inability to pick good talent.
It could
you
be.
You had a national talent search, Vince McMahon.
It could be.
You advertised in Billboard magazine and across many different media sources searching for one man that could be the new face and voice of the World Wrestling Federation. You flew me in back and forth 4 and 5 different times from Detroit, and you chose over the course of 1 year of negotiations that I would be the man for that job. I didn't sleep with your vice president. 2 weeks later, I'm fired. I also want to point out one very important fact. From your office came a letter to my landlord to verify my employment. From that letter, I must bring this point up. It says Murray Hodson has a very secure job with Titan Sports and is a positive and productive employee. From your office, just because I don't sleep with your vice president, that qualifies to blow me out of a 2-year deal? I don't buy it.
Right.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting, who just stole $20 out of my wallet. How are you doing today, Wei?
I'm doing very well.
I want to start this off by saying I forgive you.
You can keep your forgiveness because I don't need it, because I know I'm fully in the right. And
can we talk about what happened after Review of Raw, where you punched me? That was so uncalled for.
I punched you. I punched you over the Skype telephone.
Yes. You came right through my screen, and then you gave a virus to my computer.
I did not punch you, but, it was a very heated argument.
Very heated debate online, Wei.
And it continues online amongst our listeners. Some siding with you, but some siding with me as well.
It's very much down the middle, Wei. 50-50, which is good, I guess. I guess there's Team Pollock and Team Ting.
Yeah,
out
I'd,
there.
I'd say so. I'd say that it leans more towards my argument, I think.
I would disagree. I would disagree wholeheartedly. But you know what? I don't want to bring Monday's mess into Wednesday's podcast. So we're going to get into the show. But how are you doing today, Mr. Ting?
Doing great.
It's great. Today I'm powered by Rockstar.
Jesus.
Xdurance.
Oh, you know those things will kill you. Didn't you read those news reports?
Will they? Is Rockstar among them?
I don't know.
Only 10 calories per serving.
I don't think you have to worry about calories.
This is the blueberry pomegranate Asahi lightly carbonated.
It's more about the caffeine, is it not? And the sugar?
Well, you know what? I need a boost today. It's, today was supposed to be my day off, but I'm not getting a day off because of family day this week. So, I need that extra bit of energy.
Shouldn't you get 2 days off? Shouldn't you get family day and your actual day off?
No. In the Logically, probably, but unfortunately, like, for instance, Wednesday mornings we shoot our main show on the network, Fight News Now, and I've got to write that script. So whether I'm writing it here or writing it at home, I'm doing work. Mm. So, and this podcast has to get done.
Yes, it does.
We've got to chat about a lot of stuff today on the program. Mainly dealing with a time period in wrestling history that I would imagine a lot of listeners probably aren't too familiar with, maybe not familiar with at all, and certainly an absolutely dark period in specifically World Wrestling Federation's history. I would argue that this period of scandals had a lot more repercussions than even the Chris Benoit issue, which was, you know, very, very unfortunate in and of itself. It was just so much more widespread and covered so much different aspects, whether it be all of the steroid allegations that were coming during this early time period following Dr. George Zahorian's trial in 1991, and then this whole sex scandal that involved numerous people making allegations and, you know, a lot of people coming forth, both underage kids and legal, you know, adults coming forward about stuff. It was just a very dirty time period in wrestling history.
Yeah, and I'll be the first to say, I'm one of these people who didn't know really much of any of this going on until I started watching this episode of Donahue. I mean, myself as a fan, starting from maybe a little after all this stuff went down, as a wrestling fan, even on the internet for a long, long time, I'd say it was kept relatively well, I don't know, concealed.
Well, it's not something they were really going to promote on their television.
No, what I mean is, like,
this week, you can see some of your favorite stars on Geraldo.
Yeah, discussing sex.
Catch Vince McMahon stopped in his car.
But I mean, what I mean is, I don't know. It's not really something you hear talked about too much, even, you know, by people like us.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where it's when it comes to many of these stories, and you can extend this as well to the Chris Benoit issue, is that these are stories where people want an answer to. They want to know what happened. They want to know the facts, and they want to know who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. And, you know, in a lot of these cases, answers don't come forward, and therefore these stories are eventually just forgotten and moved away from because we didn't get that concrete answer. And it leaves a lot of gray area in terms of what happened because only a small amount of people actually know what happened. And in these cases, specifically with the sex scandals, these cases, they never really went anywhere.
Right.
And a lot of settlements were made, and mm-hmm. people never did go forward, and it left a big kind of void. So mm-hmm. it's not like we're going to solve anything on this podcast. And for those that tune in to Review Away, I mean, typically we have a lot of fun on this show, but this is not exactly a very fun topic to discuss.
Not at all.
Drugs, pedophiles, and sexual harassment.
Yeah, in fact, I felt really uncomfortable watching this, and I'm sure there's going to be some uncomfortable moments even discussing this. You know, first, just let me say, you know, like you said, we're not here to really reveal any type of truth at all. We're not here to, you know, arrive at any type of judgment or conclusion to this. That's impossible. The story is bigger than you or I, or, you know, you or I could possibly, you know, be able to speculate too. But
Will say, though, that I feel that we will have at least a lot of information that we can convey. And one of my biggest resources going into this show, if you want to read more about this, some of the evil wrestling media out there did such a fantastic job covering this story in the early 90s, specifically Wade Keller, the Pro Wrestling Torch, and Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. I read so much about this over the weekend that I had to just, it was just like, it was too much. Mm. Like, I was just like, this is just horrendous stuff, but nonetheless, I have so much facts now in my head of all this stuff that went on at the time. So we are going to dive into this and discuss. So I guess we should kind of set up first kind of what led to this. First, going through the Phil Donahue Show, which I think most people familiar with this, with thanks to YouTube, stuff like this exists in video form for people mm-hmm. to go back and watch. And amazing that this was 21 years ago.
Yeah, did you ever watch Donahue back then?
Never. This was the one and only episode of Phil Donahue I have ever watched.
Did you watch any of these shows?
I did, actually. I loved Jerry Springer when I was like in my teen years. Mm-hmm. I used to, and I honestly, I found such an interest in Jerry Springer because I think I viewed it the exact same as wrestling. There was never a part of me that believed any of these people were anything but playing characters. And I judged it almost the same way as wrestling, that it was like, this is the baby face, and then we've got the heel coming. There were literally run-ins. There were fights. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were a wrestling fan, I think you couldn't help but make the crossover here. So I love these. When I would stay home like sick, I would watch like Maury Povich at times. I enjoyed these shows.
Yeah.
Like, find out who the father is.
I think we all did. There was a period I remember, I was probably like 8 years old, where like everybody coming home from school was just talking about, oh, did you guys all see Jerry Springer? And then we were like 8 years old. It didn't help that Jerry Springer would be the show that followed the Cantonese news.
Oh, really?
So, like, my parents
on CFMT, was
yeah,
it? So Channel 4?
So we'd all watch it, and I'll watch all
your
this
family
stuff.
You would watch it with?
Yeah.
Oh, I always changed the channel when my parents came in the room. There was no way I could watch
it
with my parents around.
And then there's these, like, you know, hookers on the show talking about being... getting pregnant and all that. So, yeah, it was good family viewing.
Actually, and back when I was in elementary school, every year we had a public speaking competition where for all the intermediate grades, actually it was like from grade 5 through grade 8, every student had to write like a 5 to 6 minute speech and get in front of the class and read their speech. And you could pick any topic you wanted. So in grade 7, I picked television talk show content. And this was right after an episode of the Jenny Jones Show where it was revealed that this guy, one of his best friends or some guy he knew, came out of the closet and wanted to sleep with this guy. And it led to this person who was kind of blindsided here killing his friend. And it was this gigantic story at the time of, you know, this guy who just snapped and... Okay. I guess very homophobic and thus killed this guy. And you can look up the story for the exact details. But anyway, I wrote my whole speech on this. And I will say I thought it was very well done. And I ended up being picked from my class to represent my class for the whole school competition.
Wow.
With my speech.
That's pretty cool.
Yep.
And
that's it.
What was the conclusion that you came to?
I can't remember. Yeah. I remember the key was that every speech I remember listening to, I always found the beginning so boring. Mm-hmm. Like, people would start off like it's a book or something and would write a speech. And I always in my head was like, that's the worst way to start off a speech because I'm already lost here. So I got up there and, like, I'm 12, 13 at the time. And I remember I also, I didn't use cue cards. I memorized my speech so I could just get the bullet points here.
You really had a flair for performing, even at a young age.
Well, I tried. But I got up there, and it's like, you know, you got to sit through 30 of these speeches in your class. So yeah. I get up there, and I was just like, homosexuals, transvestites, blowjobs, masturbation. These are the topics that are getting people's attention with late-night talk shows and is having mixtures of success.
Oh, my.
And boom, I had people.
I don't even know if I knew what any of those things were at that age.
I did at the time. This was pre-Google as well.
Jesus.
I had to look this up in encyclopedias and ask people.
Some shocking speech.
That was the key. I wish I still had my speech available. I'd post it on the message board.
You would play it right now if you found it.
I'd get our man Chris Maffei to transcribe it for us all. Mm-hmm. I want to add, this guy Chris Maffei, I want to give a big thank you. This is the guy who, whenever we have a big interview or something that we try to circulate, he transcribes our interviews. And this guy does it in like an hour. It's incredible this turnaround time, because I hate transcribing, as you learned during our Bret Hart documentary, where you transcribed everything and you have another crazy skill.
I'm not as fast as
you're pretty fucking is. Quick. Anyway, Chris Maffei, he never gets recognition on this show. I want to thank him. He's a big part of getting the word out when we have a big interview. So
yes.
I want to thank him publicly.
Thank you, Chris.
Anyway, that was our segue there. All right, Phil Donahue. So basically, folks, 1991 is when the steroid distribution scandal kind of, that's where the seeds were planted, so to speak. Everyone knows Vince McMahon. He went on trial in 1994 on conspiracy to distribute steroids,
got off during that trial. But in 1991, Dr. George Sahorian, who was a commissioned doctor that was assigned to WWF events in he was based out of Hershey, Pennsylvania, and he would do shows there, and he became kind of the mark doctor that would hook up a lot of guys with steroids, with painkillers. And then he went on trial in 1991, got sentenced to 3 years in prison, and his name was a focal point in 1994 because there was a point when the commission no longer was going to allow Zahorian to do these WWF events, and the WWF was planning that they were going to bring Zahorian in on their own as their own doctor, but they got a tip off that there was a federal investigation, so they never actually hired Zahorian, and that was a huge saving grace for the WWF in 1994. So that's who Dr. George Sahorian is in a nutshell, and kind of led to this whole steroid issues. And then amidst all of this, Hulk Hogan went on the Arsenio Hall show in July of 1991, and he was asked point blank, did you ever use steroids? And he said, I used it on three occasions, and it was all for therapeutic use. Therapeutic use exemption. Mm. See how everything is tied together way 21 years later, 22 years later?
The same excuses are being used.
So, and the wrestling world was outraged here because Hulk Hogan was not exactly subtle about his steroid use. And people like superstar Billy Graham came out talking about this, Dr. D. David Schultz, and guys talking about personally injecting Hogan. Billy Graham talked about how he taught Hulk Hogan how to cycle on and off of steroids because he was a guy that he just injected himself year round. He didn't learn about cycling until Billy Graham instructed him. So, and this was also very controversial. Not only is Hulk Hogan your number one babyface, I mean, this guy was marketing Hulk Hogan vitamins to children. I mean, this was a PR disaster and a huge part in the reason that Hulk Hogan disappeared after WrestleMania 8 when all of this scrutiny was abound over Hulk Hogan and kind of the idea to get him out of the spotlight and ultimately leading to him being off television for about a year in the WWF. Mm. So that was kind of the setup here. And then into early 1992, that's when the sex scandal, allegations started coming forward about inappropriate advances by WWF officials. And the three key people here that were sort of pointed to were Mel Phillips, who was a ring announcer that you'll probably see on a lot of old Madison Square Garden shows and was kind of in charge of the ring crew when they would run the Northeast Loop. Terry Garvin, who was an executive with the WWF at the time, who was in charge of overseeing kind of the ring crew nationally and an executive with the company. And then the third one being Pat Patterson, who was basically Vince McMahon's right-hand man throughout this time. And at first, there was complete denial that there was any wrongdoing, and then the WWF came forward stating that they had accepted the resignations of all three officials who had insisted that they resign from the company. That was the WWF's stance at the time.
So these allegations came out, and where did they come out?
This was where...
Was there not an article in was it the New York
Post? The New York Post, I think, might have been the first one because they had spoken directly to Tom Cole, who was a ring boy with the WWF starting at around the age of like 13 or 14, mm-hmm. and brought in with Mel Phillips, and then it was actually Tom Cole basically turned down the advances of, according to Tom Cole, okay? I think the word allegedly is going to be the word of this podcast. Tom Cole, he had stated in his story that, you know, there had been kind of inappropriate gestures by Pat Patterson and that Terry Garvin as well made advances at him and when he was, and as well Mel Phillips. And mm-hmm. Cole specifically went after the, discussing these incidents. And then after he turned down the advances, it was after that he stopped being booked regularly and was eventually let go and then kept the story quiet, told his brother Lee Cole, and Lee Cole, who followed Phil Mushnick of the New York Post, who wrote very critically about the WWF and some of their practices covering the steroid trial of Zahorian. And Lee Cole went to Mushnick, with this story, and then he spoke to Tom Cole, and Cole told his whole story to Mushnick, and that's when this really came to the forefront. And then we heard others come forward. Barry Orton, who is Randy Orton's uncle, he came forward alleging of an incident involving Terry Garvin on a road trip. There was another man that we saw on Geraldo. No, not Geraldo, on the Donahue show. Tom Hankins, was that
yes,
his name?
Yes, that's right.
Who was a prelim wrestler, didn't work for the WWF. And as well, Murray Hodgson, who was hired as a television announcer for both the WBF, the World Bodybuilding Federation, and for a very brief time with the World Wrestling Federation, basically doing the Sean Mooney live events, mm-hmm. and then was fired and stated that it was Pat Patterson who made an advance at him. And that was why he was fired and then filed a lawsuit against the WWF. So kind of all of this was brewing at once. It was one story after the other. Vince went on Larry King Live a week prior to this, and this was an infamous segment where Bruno Sammartino also joined them by satellite. They got into a big debate, an argument, and Vince stated on the show with Larry King that no one is on steroids in the WWF, and then it was about a week later that Vince said, well, we did a first test of our talent, and 50% were on steroids. It is now down to 15%. So completely lied on Larry King. So his credibility was already suspect going into this Phil Donahue show. And the Donahue show, between what happened on air and off air, fascinating. Like, this was like a TNT drama. If you, after you hear all the behind the scenes stories that went on involved in this Donahue show, it's nothing short of just mind blowing that this actually happened.
Wow. Okay. So, well, let's get into it.
There you go. So the show began, with Donahue doing an introduction and talking about, the wrestlers having to have sex with men to get ahead. And a lot of people in our feedback noted this way. And it was something that really disturbed me, was just how lightly this studio audience took this to be. And I don't know, like, what humor can be found in sexual harassment, male or female? Yeah. I don't understand. We're talking about pedophilia and rape here, and this audience is snickering at all this because of it being pro wrestling.
Yeah, and I think that's if this was another line of work, you know, if this was a typical office thing and these allegations were being brought up, certainly I don't think this audience would have that same reaction. But because pro wrestling, oh, that's that kid stuff, that's that fake stuff, that's that stuff where you're not really supposed to take it seriously. And then when you put these really serious, you know, allegations behind it, I think it kind of took this audience by surprise, as you could see from many of their reactions.
Now, based on this this 1 hour piece, what did you think of Phil Donahue in terms of a host of, you know, kind of dealing with all of these bodies here? Very complicated story. Yeah. What did you think of Phil Donahue?
I thought he was really good. I think, you know, being subjected to shows like these and like Jerry Springer, you have to be, I guess, what is that word? Skeptical of you know, the credibility of these people and the credibility of the producers of the show. Are these people actually trying to produce some real insight and news in their product, or is this
simply
just
get great television?
Yeah, certainly, you know, Donahue, I really hadn't seen much of him before. But
it came across that he at least tried to do his homework to get up to speed on this very complex issue. And tackling an industry, which I always tend to give a pass when these big news stories come out and suddenly, you know, these you know, regular mainstream news outlets have to cover pro wrestling. I mean, it's such a bizarre industry that it's very difficult when you're covering real news to suddenly, today we're going to cover steroids and pro wrestling, and you're given probably 2 hours of prep time.
I thought Donahue was a host. He was really, really, you know, fair, I thought, as fair as you, I guess you can be when there are, you know, a bunch of people and then Vince McMahon defending one side. And I thought he was able to control all the people quite well.
So the opening features a Donahue at a desk, and he gives basically a rundown of the WWF and gives out this was at the time a figure that was thrown out of the WWF being a $1.7 billion a year business. Completely not true. It was much closer to $125 million. And Vince actually wouldn't even commit to this number when he said this alleged revenue that we bring in every year. But he introduces Vince McMahon with this hideous brown suit on. And they talk about Terry Garvin and Pat Patterson resigning. And Vince basically gives an opening statement that he's here to learn about what happened and getting so kind of out of the state of denial and into the let's find out what happened. And he is here to assist.
Right. What was his stance on the Larry King show that he appeared on the week prior?
I haven't seen the full Larry King thing, so I can't comment other than, you know, basically the write-ups. I can find that segment anywhere online. Right, I'm okay. Sure it exists somewhere.
But apparently, from what we read anyway, his stance is very much changed between that time and on this episode where he, you know, sort of in a... Oh, sorry about that.
Time to wake up.
There's the aliens. You know, sort of in an attempt to, I guess, throw a curveball at his competition on this show, instead of saying... No. He's going to say, maybe. I'm here to find out just along with you.
So originally, Vince was not going to be a part of this discussion. And then he was added to it at the last minute, I believe the day before. And Bruno Sammartino was also on this panel. And he stated ahead of time that he was so furious about Vince McMahon telling blatant lies on Larry King that if he is seated next to Vince, which is what Donahue's crew wanted to do for maximum drama, he said, please do not put me next to Vince because if he lies, I will not be able to stop myself from punching him. Mm. Which Donahue's producers, that you guys are sitting together.
Yeah,
same. But they were complete opposites. So
it's just watching this whole thing, it's just amazing to me that this guy now, Bruno, is going to be in Vince's Hall of Fame and they're going to be in the same building together, working in the same company and perhaps with more projects to come.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So Vince is at the desk. And he looks rather uncomfortable here as they start to introduce it. First, before they went to the panel, they were at a desk.
They set up a round table.
A round table with Donahue as the moderator. Vince was on one side. And then on the other, we had Tom Hankins, the former pro wrestler we mentioned, who as well as Barry Orton and Murray Hodgson, who we mentioned was a commentator for 2 months and claimed that he did not sleep with Pat Patterson, who is the VP of the company, but he does not go out of it. He does not name Pat Patterson. They just leave him unnamed at this point.
It was actually Vince who named Patterson.
Yes.
Yeah.
So basically, and then Donahue here cracked a joke about this all. I found that the joke's a little unnecessary in here, that Donahue was trying to keep this light, but this really wasn't a light topic, but nonetheless. Then we got into Barry Orton. He claimed that in 1978, he was in a back seat and claimed that two executives grabbed at him in a car when he was 19 at the time, and enough that his clothes were torn and he had to get out. And then a future time where Garvin propositioned him again, and Orton said that this eventually cost him his job and not being able to get to a certain level in the WWF. And then Tom Hankins, who brought up an incident from 1985 after a show in Los Angeles and was contacting Pat Patterson at a bar after a show, trying to get work as a enhancement talent, and claimed that Patterson said there was one way that he could get regular work, and that would be by going to his room later. And Hankins turned this down, and then at a later show, showed up at a WWF event and was thrown out of the backstage area where he was usually welcome because he had friends there. So right. Those were the allegations thrown out here. And McMahon discusses here, saying that they have never looked the other way, states that all three officials are gone, and he has hired a group, an independent investigation is being conducted to find out exactly what happened. And McMahon then gets into an argument here with Hodgson, who Murray Hodgson came across to me as the most well-rehearsed in terms of his speech. And I've got to say, in terms of a performance, Murray Hodgson here definitely came in prepared.
A great performance from both men. And, you know,
you did a horrible job. That's why you were fired.
Yeah, I feel kind of dirty for just looking at this from an entertainment standpoint. But
no,
I mean,
but you have to, because these guys, listen, I can guarantee you the majority of these people, Vince McMahon for a fact, You know, was coach going into these. This is like a presidential debate, you know?
It's a pro wrestling promo battle.
Is a huge key to all of this.
It's a pro wrestling promo battle between two people, and what a way to showcase that than a round table sitting these two men face to face. Murray Hodgson versus Vince McMahon, the high point of this show.
Yes. So Hodgson, as he is arguing here and going through the entire hiring process, which he says took over a year, of which he was flown in numerous times and eventually hired, to discredit Vince, saying that you were not qualified and couldn't make the transition from radio to television. And then McMahon accuses Hodgson of wanting $160,000 or else he will come on the Donahue show to speak of this, to which Hodgson vehemently denies this.
Excuse me?
And McMahon says, well, you should contact your lawyer. Now, in a follow-up to this, about a week after this, Dave Meltzer reported that Vince McMahon had a letter from Hodgson's lawyer indicating this very fact, and that piece of paper was in McMahon's coat pocket on stage.
Really? Why wouldn't he bring it up?
I don't know. That was the story, at least afterwards, okay. That for whatever reason.
That's kind of sketchy.
Basically wanting some shut-up money. And Hodgson would go forward with a lawsuit, not for sexual harassment and not against Patterson, but simply a wrongful dismissal suit against the WWF, which was ultimately thrown out. And Hodgson's credibility was severely called into question, and lots of stories about his past, and ultimately didn't lead to anything.
His lawyer actually stepped down from his case and called him
the most dishonest man I have ever represented.
Yes.
Then we go to a commercial break and come back with everyone on the stage here, and it includes Dave Meltzer.
I will say, though, Hodgson definitely gained this crowd's favor. And McMahon, you know, from the get-go, the evil boss, true to what he would eventually become on camera, but just even at this point.
I thought Hodgson outperformed Vince here in this situation.
Yeah, but even Vince was walking in here as the villain. This show was positioning his company and himself as the villain, and so crowd very much on all the other people's sides.
Yeah, this was and this is like, listen, you might think that we're being callous here, grading performance here, but this is swaying public opinion based on their performances here.
Politics.
And yeah, this was Hodgson really positioning himself with like key statements that could like hit Vince, pausing and allowing the crowd to just, you know, clap here, and it really perpetuates Hodgson's case.
Well,
here.
Yeah, it's just especially important to note this because, you know, of what has eventually come out about Murray Hodgson. Perhaps that, hey, fuck, this was perhaps all a lie.
Yeah. I will say, though, that for a guy that was, you know, allegedly fired for just being bad at his job, I mean, this guy could have been a great heel character.
Maybe.
Anyway, maybe he missed his calling doing live events and could have been a manager.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
He did look a bit like Eric Bischoff, I found, too.
Did he?
A little bit.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, this onto the stage with Dave Meltzer, Wrestling Observer Newsletter, who I think all of you are familiar with. Then John Arezzi, who hosted the Wrestling Spotlight show in New York and syndicated in many different markets, and was you know, covering this story very intently. And you want to know an interesting story on John Arezzi, who I don't know what he's up to now. He would be a fascinating guy to talk to, covering, you know, kind of similar to a show like ours, but back in 92.
Is he no longer in covering the business?
No, doesn't cover it at all. His financial backer told him, I want you to lay off the criticism of the WWF. Do you want to know who his financial backer was?
Who?
Vince Russo.
What?
Vince Russo.
How did Vince Russo have that, the money to financially back?
He was running a video store at the time, and he was eventually able to go from... he would get his own radio show as a result at the end of this after a break with Arezzi, I believe. I believe it was a split between them, and then Russo would do his radio show for a time, and that was his segue to get into writing for WWF Magazine. Wow. And from there, catapulted to the creative team.
Is that right?
So there you go. Wow. Donahue throws out this, you know, guys, this is, you know, kind of funny, you know, the big boys playing with each other. And Dave Meltzer pretty much says, that's ridiculous. This is not funny at all. So let's get down to business.
He didn't say that.
Well, that's pretty much what he did. He shot down the idea this could be comedy fodder.
No, yeah, no, obviously not.
Anyway, so superstar Billy Graham is introduced by Donahue. He's won his share. Superstar Billy Graham.
And
the,
the
crowd was very...
You're doing Donahue.
Yeah, I was trying to do my Donahue. Not so good. Graham says he specifically saw ring boys harassed and said that Pat Patterson once grabbed a child by the crotch. And this is an incident that years later, when the WWE and Graham made up, Graham went into the Hall of Fame, they did the DVD, they helped promote his book. Patterson never, ever has forgiven Graham for this allegation.
Jesus, do you blame a guy?
Nope. If this is not true, and listen, Billy Graham is someone whose credibility you can call into question when it comes to citing incidents. So, once again, we can't say factually what happened or not.
Maybe
but these are his
right.
allegations, and if that's a lie, that's probably the lowest thing you can do of accusing someone of...
See, but what reason would he have?
You know, if you've got a personal vendetta, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. And
we're not going to get into the mind and psyche of superstar Billy Graham. Then he brings up an incident involving Mel Phillips. And this was an incident a few people echoed in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where Mel Phillips was caught in a car performing oral sex on a 10-year-old in 1982. But Graham does say he did not specifically see this. And Vince McMahon basically echoes the reaction pretty much anyone would have. Yeah. If you saw this, why wouldn't you call the authorities? Why wouldn't you speak up? And Graham talks about his own steroid abuse, says that his wife, who is sitting in the front row, if she had a gun, she would have shot George Zahorian and shot Vince McMahon, who he blames for his addiction to steroids. Now, listen, there's a lot of criticism you can levy here at Vince McMahon. Addiction to steroids is not one that I'm going to put solely on the shoulders of Vince McMahon. And you can argue of a look that the WWF certainly pushed at that time and maybe it being a necessary evil, but I honestly believe that Vince McMahon has never flat out said to someone, get on the gas. Hmm. But it's certainly an unspoken reality, especially at this time. Listen, if you're 180 pounds, good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. It still is. But really, that I find the whole steroid issue really besides the point of you know, what they're trying to talk about here.
Yeah, I almost kind of wish that they had picked one or the other to go after, because these are two heavy, heavy topics. And doing both, I feared that it was like with this many people, it's just going to become a shouting match.
Yep.
And that's ultimately what a lot of these things turn into.
And imagine what the woman who just thought all pro wrestling was fake, imagine how confused she was.
This isn't
real.
I don't
get this storyline.
Oh, God, the audience. My God. Bruno Sammartino is then introduced. He talks about the wrestling that he participated in and the wrestling of today are two completely different things. He talks about coming back to work for the WWF as an announcer with his son David Sammartino getting work, and that he refused to go on the road with some of these talents because he was in fear of being caught and drugs being found in the cars. And Vince McMahon acknowledged this and assigned him to drive with Chief J. Strongbow so that he knew that he would be driving with someone who would not be caught with drugs, and basically an admission that, yeah, there's a lot of drug use amongst these guys.
Mm-hmm.
From here, Donahue discusses the fact that we can reasonably assume that pot is smoked by wrestlers, cocaine is used, and steroids must be used. And more allegations are revealed. John Arezzi talks about one midget wrestler named the Karate Kid, who also believes was propositioned by Pat Patterson. And as Arezzi is trying to describe this issue, I mean, he's using the names of the midget wrestlers, like Karate Kid and Lord Littlebrook, and this, again, eliciting laughter from the crowd. Like, this sounds ridiculous. I mean, Meltzer then brings up the fact that Barry Orton recently took a polygraph test, so he believes Barry Orton's story about being propositioned because he really didn't need to go ahead with this polygraph test. And as we know with polygraphs, they're not admissible in court, but still, if a guy was lying, why would he on his own go through with this? And he passed.
Mm-hmm.
So Have you ever taken a lie detector test?
I have not.
I would love to try one.
Sure.
See if you could beat it.
Yeah, okay. We could set that up. Sure. What would you be doing?
You don't hear about lie detector tests too often anymore.
Yeah. I feel like they could be beaten.
Yeah.
You know?
They were used on Dallas a few times.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Then, Orton discusses a bit more about Garvin. At this point, Wei, we're like halfway into the show. Who in your mind was coming off well and who was coming off poorly?
I'll tell you who came across well was Dave Meltzer, because...
he seemed like the sane one of the bunch.
He seemed like the one without an agenda here to push. He seemed like the one without anything to gain, no matter who wins or loses.
I believe it was Vince's request that Dave be there. He was the only one he labeled as a credible journalist.
Yep.
Because Vince had a lot of demands to come on this show, some that were turned down and some that were acquiesced to.
And it was almost like Dave is the man with the facts and with the numbers, and he was... I think even on this panel amongst these people, very much respected as somebody who just seemed to know the truth. And, you know, at one point, Dave even like starts to explain why perhaps these people have not come out with all these allegations sooner. And he says that
Dave, you know, and this is a very tough forum to get information across because it's soundbite, soundbite, soundbite. And Dave was able in his limited time to explain kind of the culture of this industry. And he brought up the Bruiser Brody death in 1988 and the fact that something as extreme as a man being murdered in a locker room and people being afraid to go back and go against the promoters because of fear of being blackballed from the industry. Yep. This is the kind of wrestling culture that exists. And the idea of being a rat is very much prevalent in this society and almost presenting it as like this secret society.
Yeah, Bruno basically, you know.
Who was blackballed at one time by Vince Sr.
Says that as well. And he mentioned that but didn't go into detail.
Billy Graham, he talks about, you know, his real tip-off point was Hulk Hogan lying on the Arsenio Hall show for only using steroids on those three times, and refers to Hogan's lies as child molestation of their minds.
Yeah, which was, colorful language, which that definitely...
soundbite.
Definitely seemed to sway somebody in the audience.
I would say at this point... I'm with you. I thought Dave came across very well. I thought Vince being kind of even-tempered about things and the fact that it was quickly becoming a pile-on on Vince, that inevitably there was going to be certain sympathy for Vince. And I'm curious if Vince almost agreed to do this without wanting any other people on the stage with him, because that natural sympathy was going to come out, that if everyone is attacking Vince and he's being level-headed and presenting a, listen, I'm here to help. I'm here. I don't have a gun to my head to be on this show, and I'm here presenting this. I could see going into this show the idea that Vince comes out of this sympathetic to people, that Vince was not aware of any of this is going on, and he's taking a step forward. Whether that's true or not, that's what is conveyed here.
You know, looking at this from, you know, like a political perspective, it was definitely a perfect stance for Vince to take. And whether or not he came across better coming out of this, I'm not sure. I don't know. But did he make the right choice by being on the show? Sure, I would think so. I mean, imagine how this would have went down if he wasn't there.
There was this, basically, this back and forth here that was interesting to watch with John Arezzi originally confronting Vince, saying, Vince, is it not true that you said that you were devastated that Hulk Hogan lied on the Arsenio Hall show? And Vince goes, I didn't say the word. I wouldn't say devastated. And then Dave pipes in, the word you used to me was devastated. And the crowd goes nuts. And Vince was furious after the show about this, that he felt Dave and John Arezzi constructed this this setup.
You can't argue the truth.
A bit of a stretch on Vince's part. But then Vince goes on to say... you know, we didn't know the risks involved with steroids back then. And then Dave's like, we knew the risks.
Yeah, and Dave was also quick to point out, well, Vince says steroids were legal at the time that they were being used.
Oh, and Dave just comes at him. Dave was quick to point
out. Dave was quick to point out, not in some states. And so, you know, for many years, and I think many years to come, just the most credible voice in our industry.
I don't want this to become a glorification of Dave Meltzer, but I'm just so thankful that there are people that were covering the industry this in depth and continue to at this point. And it drives me nuts when some people get on, you know, wrestling media and such like that. It really is amazing to me that some people feel that wrestling is beneath being covered as an industry, as a business.
I don't know if that's the entire gripe. I mean, I think certain people just feel like maybe the media, the wrestling media, is a bit too critical at times. And maybe, you know, at times it's warranted and maybe at times it isn't.
Anyway, that's a subject for another day.
Yeah, maybe it's a Twitter argument.
No, it's not. No debates are meant for Twitter. Anyway, then we go into the low point of the show, which was the audience Q&A. And
every show needs one.
No, this show certainly did not. And questions
is
include...
Is this how people feel about our feedback section on these podcasts?
Listen...
Our audience is way smarter than these.
We also skim our questions, and if something has nothing of contribution to our show, we don't read it.
Yeah.
And I would put our listeners way ahead Donahue's audience here in the studio.
Oh, certainly.
Anyway, questions included, what are the percentage of people performing these acts? Can we get a percentage point, please? McMahon gives an update saying one employee is suspended and two executives have resigned. One woman calls Billy Graham a scumbag if he had witnessed a child being abused and said nothing. Then
that's where the confusion came in, because Billy Graham used the word molestation, and this woman somehow confused that by thinking that Billy Graham had seen a child be molested. Which I don't think.
No, he said the child molestation line, but he also cited an incident where Pat Patterson grabbed a kid by the crotch.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, then a young kid defends Vince and takes a shot at Bruno, saying that your son was fired under suspicion. This kid felt like a plant.
But this kid didn't.
This kid looked to be no more than 12.
This kid to me looked like somebody who was very much into the industry and knew the behind the scenes, probably read the dirt sheets, and just took this as an opportunity to
Bruno basically to said, shut up.
To show how much he knows about these people's backstories. And Bruno's just like starts laughing at him. What does that have to do with anything? And yeah, it had nothing to do with anything.
Absolutely not. You don't disrespect Bruno Sammartino.
Somebody in the audience asked, I wonder why people get into wrestling in the first place.
It's so tacky.
Tacky. I mean, you could tell it's sleazy just by looking at it.
And then the highlight being one woman asking if it's fixed, and Dave saying, that's an irrelevant question.
Absolutely.
So a terrible end to the show. But interesting notes afterwards that came out after this was in Dave Meltzer's newsletter, he kind of did like almost a post-game report. Did you read this part?
I did, yes.
Okay. So he talks about during one of the commercial breaks, Vince leaning over to Dave saying that this is like the longest hour of his life.
Yeah.
And you got to imagine being Vince McMahon sitting through this. Yeah. And listen, you can come to your own conclusions. It's not like Vince McMahon was kind of just, you know, this innocent, persecuted soul here. I mean, it's really hard to believe that here with all of this going on. I mean, these allegations, as much as people want to... you know, maybe feel better about this time period and what the WWF was doing or not doing. This was not some small secret amongst that this stuff was occurring. Because we've heard from a few people, Way, that this was pretty well known at the time of what was going on involving the likes of Terry Garvin and Mel Phillips. There were, if you go back and watch some old shows like with Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura, there would actually be commentary where a guy would be doing like a reverse hammerlock or something and saying, oh, this guy obviously from the Terry Garvin school of self-defense.
Yes.
And you know, same with Pat Patterson. I mean, this was openly, you know, tongue-in-cheek.
I mean, in my research, or at least just talking to or seeing you know, all the public reaction towards these segments, it does seem as though the popular opinion is that Patterson was a scapegoat for many of these allegations simply because he was homosexual.
Very easy target here. An openly homosexual at a time when, I mean, this is 1992, which in, you know, still a very, you know, taboo area, so to speak, in 1992, and in a position of power. So, I mean, if you're looking for an easy target, Pat Patterson was certainly it. And the allegations that came out with, from Patterson, we had Barry Orton citing the incident in the car with him and Garvin. And then we also had, who we mentioned, Tom Cole alleging that Patterson at one point, when Cole was maybe like 16 years old, Patterson kind of staring at his crotch and kind of, you know, not actually touching him, but at least anyway, I'm trying to paint
a
picture.
I mean, also Tom Hankins here on this episode alleging that Patterson was forcing him to you know, if you want to work for me, you got to do this. And of course Murray Hodge and naming Pat Patterson as well.
Yeah. So afterwards, Meltzer also noting the fact that Tom Cole was actually in the audience here at this show. He had filed a lawsuit against the WWF for wrongful dismissal, and a secret settlement had been made between the WWF and Tom Cole, where Cole would be paid $50,000 in back pay and be given his job back.
Right, okay. So let's just backtrack a little. Tom Cole is the ring boy who first came out with the with all these allegations towards the New York Post.
Yes.
And at this time, he was he contacted to be on Donahue? I would imagine so, right?
I would imagine, yes, he would have been contacted to be on the show. But ended up not going on the show. Yeah. He was...
However, he was... Later on, just basically, unbeknownst to the producers of the show, brought into the audience by Vince McMahon.
He was sitting in the audience with Linda McMahon and Miss Elizabeth, who was also there, and Tom and Lee Cole were together in the audience. And the idea was that they wouldn't have been aware of this settlement, and that Tom Cole was coming back to the WWF with his old job, and that if Tom Cole's name came up...
Yeah.
During this discussion and the allegations, Vince would be able to point out Tom Cole in the crowd, and Tom Cole would vouch for Vince McMahon, and it would be this huge win for the WWF.
This sounds to me like a pro wrestling swerve, as basically down to the big Eureka moment. Hey,
yeah.
Here he is right now. Actually, I'm on Vince's side this time.
And apparently, Barry Orton had got wind of something going on and thought it would be best not to bring up Tom Cole's name on the show.
Yeah.
And I think Dave would have known about this too. So anyway, it never came up. Tom Cole's name was never mentioned. And then afterwards, one of the producers was discussing how great it would have been if Tom Cole could have been on this show. And then they pointed out, that's Tom Cole right there.
Yeah.
And they were just stunned.
It's really interesting to watch people involved in the world of pro wrestling on in a forum like this, because I guess when you're so trained in the art of conning people,
this is the business of manipulating.
You have so many you just end up being so good at it, and you have so many tools at your disposal that it's just so interesting to try to dissect and see what these people are doing from a pro wrestling context on a show like Donahue.
Yeah. Tom Cole, I just want to finish up on Tom Cole as well, because he was a central figure during this whole case. He ended up going back to the WWF and only lasted there about a year before he was let go again. Now, this is a guy that, you know, came from a bit of a broken home as well. And you just, like, imagine being, you know, propositioned here and then going back to work for this company who had, at the time, promised that these executives will not be coming back. And eventually, you know, Patterson would return to the company about 5 months later. And then Cole left. And then Cole would do an interview in 1999 that I found online and read, where he was very critical of the WWF in 99 about the content they were presenting, and pretty much discussing this at length. And then I guess Jerry McDivitt, who is the WWE's main lawyer they use, I guess some settlement was reached, or not a settlement, but something where Cole then – years later became very pro WWE, and even during Linda McMahon's first Senate campaign in 2010, they tried to contact Tom Cole, and he came out saying, "I would vote for Linda McMahon if I could." Very strange.
Yeah. clearly something going on.
So, there we go. That was the Donahue show. And then we move on to Geraldo. And what a show this was. Now It Can Be Told.
This is the name. It. What is it?
It.
Okay.
The It Factor. Mm. Okay. So this show, I would say, heightening the sensationalistic aspect of things.
Yeah, you know, rather than, I guess, talk show format, this is more, you know, like a current affair, hard copy, inside edition, that type of stuff.
And the WWF fought hard to block this from airing. They were threatening lawsuits.
And this came out maybe a couple months after the Donahue episode?
No, I think it would have been later that month. I think it was fairly close. Right. And Geraldo, they were able to actually get an interview with Tom Cole, where apparently the producer contacted Tom Cole saying, "We want to interview you." Mm-hmm. And Tom Cole turned them down. And the producer, just to get an idea of kind of the mentality of some of these producers and how they work in this environment with these kind of stories, the producer tells Tom Cole, "We can do this the easy way, and you say yes. Or we can do this the hard way, where we will camp out on your lawn and we will confront you every time you leave your house till you interview us."
This was, where did you get that information?
This was from Tom Cole himself.
Okay.
I believe in that interview.
If
you want to look it up, it's with Wrestling Perspective and it's from 1999. If you Google it, it'll come up. Interesting interview. So this was from Tom Cole himself. So he ended up agreeing to do the interview, but before it aired, Cole reached that settlement, and the WWF said you cannot air that interview, and they ended up having to. They basically showed B-roll of the interview occurring and blurring out his face.
Yeah, I think Cole's stipulation was that you had to wait for him to file the settlement before you could air the interview, and mm-hmm. obviously he never filed the lawsuit.
Yeah, they set this up with Geraldo, and it was actually his brother. What was his name? Craig Rivera, who was like the reporter that did this story.
Oh, okay.
So
Geraldo was the host. He was thrown to Craig Rivera, who was putting together the story.
Yeah. So Geraldo's in like this warehouse with a wrestling ring with some indie guys.
Cheesy. Anytime you see a wrestling on the local news, they're inside the ring and there's some indie workers doing some fake punches and. Okay, that's enough, guys. Thank you. Take a break.
Thanks, guys. It's so lame. They interviewed Murray Hodgson, who, in addition to his initial allegations, also cites animal abuse taking place.
I'm assuming he's talking about Damien.
Well, from some of those stories we heard at WrestleMania weekend, he was probably accurate.
What were some stories?
Remember when we went to that Q&A?
With Jake and...
Yes.
I don't remember specifically the stories.
Not to say you can take those Q&As as factual, but who knows. They interviewed Mike Clark, former WWF referee, who was actually on our MMA Expo series of podcasts we did. Back in 2011.
Yeah, he's a local.
Yes.
So we see him occasionally.
He was interviewed.
Called me a Chinaman.
Yes. Yes, he did.
Not maliciously.
No, good fun, right?
Yeah.
Then we had Tom Cole, who they mentioned here, who spoke to the New York Post originally in getting all this. They spoke to Bruno Sammartino, who discussed the sex scandals happening with the WWE for young wrestlers. And then Barry Orton, who made claims against Terry Garvin, saying that he was driving outside of Amarillo and tried to perform oral sex on him while he drove, and as well as a ring boy coming to Barry Orton and asking him about Terry Garvin and how to handle Garvin because of this constant propositioning. And Clark discusses that he, too, was approached by Garvin, and if he had gone ahead with it, he would have been booked across Canada, and talks about the Cream Team, which is what they were called.
Cream Team. Ugh.
Said he would get Mike Clark a green card so he could work in the U.S., and that Garvin and Patterson led this.
Yeah.
And it resulted in Clark being booked less.
It's creepy, man.
Sammartino brings up the car incident in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where Mel Phillips was caught in a car with an underage child. Then a bit more on Murray Hodgson, and who was fired in August of 91. and made his allegations against Patterson.
So basically, a whole, you know, the whole segment devoted to all the allegations and all the claims and just all the vicious.
Really, the only new information was from Mike Clark, who was a new character now in this story.
Just the despicable imagery that they're describing, and then we go to a shot of Bruno Sammartino, who's also interviewed for this, and he says that these ring boys are willing to do all this because they get to travel, they get to meet wrestlers. It's their dream, and if that means putting up with some obscene acts, then what's a kid to do?
Clark also talks about they bring up the fact that is there a way that WWF was not aware of this? And Clark said when he was first hired in 1987, his boss alerted him about Patterson and Garvin, and says that, if my boss was aware of this in 87, there's no way that this was a secret. That was what his allegation was. Craig Rivera, he shows up at the WWF headquarters and gets turned away from security and trying to ambush the WWF here.
This was a, what do you expect when you're doing something like that?
Sure, come on in.
Anytime,
you want a coffee?
Anytime a journalist, quote unquote journalist, tries to do this, it is exactly what the DX invasion of the Norfolk scope was. It's meant to get them. It's what the conventioners do. It's what Tom Green does. Do some foul shit and try to get kicked out to make it seem like the other person. To make it seem like you're putting one over the other person.
So they do this at WWF headquarters. They show up at the homes of Patterson and Garvin. They call them. And they're not granted interviews by anybody.
Oh, what, shocking. Yeah. And, to me, it just goes to show, if this was a real credible journalistic program, you wouldn't have to resort to gimmicks like this. Just stick to the truth. Don't resort to and that's what I really bothered me about a show like this, is just how, like you said, tabloid-like it was, how sensational it was, their use of editing to, slow pans of Vince McMahon looking really ugly to really sell that. And I don't know, just a lot of tricks and a lot of gimmickry when I feel like the story, to tell the truth, you don't need it.
Then we are introduced to Rita Chatterton, who was a female referee for the WWF during the 80s. And she alleges that she was, promised a $500,000 a year contract, and that Vince said she could get onto Time magazine, and said she got into a limousine trying to ask Vince for more work, and basically alleging here that, without saying the word rape, pretty much saying that is what happened here in this back of a limo.
So did she say that Vince had sex with her? Is that what she said?
He said that she performed oral sex on him, and then when she pulled away, he got extremely upset, and then alleges that more happened, okay, but never actually said the word rape.
Right. And she explains the reason why she hasn't come forward until now is because...
Yeah, it was 6 years in between.
Is because her parents at the time were very sick, and now that both of her parents have recently passed away, and because of other success coming forward, this led to her coming out. And it also says that she was in the middle of trying to reach an out-of-court compensation settlement with the WWE at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And how has history looked back at this case with this Rita Chatterton?
This was, Vince had always alleged that nothing had happened, and it never went to trial. So, there was nothing that came from it, really.
Okay.
That was that. It was kind of just glanced upon, and then they moved on and went back to the fact that Tom Cole had been rehired. They explained that they had this interview with Cole that they could not air. Geraldo has legal letters from the WWF and reads from Cole's affidavit stating that he was emotionally scarred from the abuse between the ages of 13 and 16, pretty much indicating that, obviously, discretions occurred.
Hmm.
So... and that was it was just a half hour piece. So, not as in depth as the Donahue one, which was an hour. And pretty much just trying to cover as many of these cases as possible with, not much coming out of this other than a few new incidents with the Rita Chatterton, case and the introduction of Mike Clark here, another person coming forward.
Yeah. At the end of all this, what I really took away from it is just, I can't believe Bruno Sammartino is going into the WWE Hall of Fame. I mean, you see him, you see Vince on this, on both these shows, and it's just amazing that this man is now going to be working with this company now. I wonder how much has changed in the time in between.
Well, I don't think any of this will be discussed, Wei, in the next 7 weeks.
No, it's not, but I guess time heals all wounds, so we will see if anything further comes. But now I have a much better grasp of why this is such a big deal for Bruno to be a part of this and why Vince might be so steadfast in staying out of it. You know, in these shows, it's just... I think the truth is somewhere in there, but it's impossible to tell... in shows like these when you're basically branding it as entertainment. And it's hard to know who's right because I don't think anybody really has credibility. I mean, Dave Meltzer aside, I don't think anybody here really is an incredibly credible source. Not Geraldo, not all these people on the panels, not Vince certainly. So I don't know.
So I guess what you most took away from this way, kind of a...
Well, I guess I'm enlightened as to about what, you know, this period. So yeah, that's it. As far as you know, who do I think is right or wrong? I can't say.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, of all these cases, really the only one that ever made it to court was Vince McMahon's steroid distribution trial in 1994. With the others, there were settlements made. Obviously, there was the one settlement with Tom Cole, and allegedly there were three ring boys where settlements were reached. One as late as the year 2000, they reached the settlement with one of them. So, I mean, that is that's kind of how history is going to view these. I don't think you're ever going to have concrete answers coming out of any of these cases for the most part. But I do encourage people to go back. There are back issues of both the Pro Wrestling Torch and Wrestling Observer newsletter that cover these pretty extensively. And if you want more information on this, I would highly suggest you go seek those issues out because those are kind of the definitive stories written on these that exist today where you can get a pretty unbiased look at all of this covered at the time from both of them. So that is our look from there, and we're going to head on over to the feedback section and see what you guys had to say about these shows. And
we'll start off with Alan Jones. First time I've seen this footage, and I found it an interesting watch, but also highly frustrating. The host, Phil Donahue, keeps interrupting, and I wish they had given Vince more of a chance to speak and defend himself. I think Billy Graham came over as a self-righteous personality. I'm very surprised that he made it into the WWE Hall of Fame, but then again, it must go to show WWE and Vince McMahon don't hold personal grudges. My thoughts are that I believe Vince knew roughly that these things were happening in the WWE at the time, but with that said, I'm pretty sure Vince wouldn't allow for underage kids to be sexually abused within his company. Vince is a smart businessman, and I don't think he would be willing to run the risk of losing everything he had accomplished to that point. Vince, I suspect, wasn't on the road with wrestlers on a constant basis, traveling from town to town, so I'm sure things of that nature were happening behind his back, while the cat away from the mouse will play, for lack of a better term. Vince hired guys like Barry O to turn up at the venue and work their match, nothing more, nothing less. What happened between towns amongst his employees while traveling, whether it's right or wrong, I can't imagine played too much on Vince's mind, or that he cared basically as long as they were doing their jobs, literally, each night. What strikes me as odd and a little uneasy is that Pat Patterson was given his job back later in the 90s, not only that was used on screen, not only that, he was later used on screen as one of Vince's stooges. I think that was in bad taste, especially if the allegations are true, even if they weren't, because of the scandal and the negative spotlight it drew on the WWE. I don't think Vince can be personally held responsible for what happened in his massive business that isn't all under one roof. So, he says, I think Bruno and Superstar and whomever else witnessed such things were just as much to blame for turning a blind eye like Vince was accused of doing.
We go to Bovin. Hello, guys, and looking forward to a great review this week. I rewatched these shows, and I have to say Donahue and Geraldo, well, he doesn't have kind words for them. No one could finish their point without Donahue telling them to wrap it up. Vince McMahon owning the announcer guy and telling him he basically sucked was priceless. Billy Graham lying through his teeth about Patterson, which he totally made up since he came clean years back. The only person who knew what he was talking about from the audience was the kid who later gets told to shut up by Bruno. Anyway, with the star power that Donahue got, he totally crapped the bed. Wished it would have been longer. Moving on to Geraldo, the guy just sucks, and the whole ring rat and ugly ref was just trash, along with Z-list independent wrestlers.
So what has Billy Graham gone on to say about Pat Patterson?
In his book, I believe he does address this and did admit it was a lie, and Patterson has never forgiven this guy for that lie, but I would want to double check.
Well, how could the public forgive somebody for... Yeah, that's terrible. But yeah, you double check that. Michael Savens, G. Vinnie Mac knows to never explain himself to yourself to your friends. Do not need it, and your enemies will not believe it, and most people don't give two fucks. Anyways, I believe that being successful like Vinnie Mac, you need to have your business shambles like... Okay, this is unreadable. Sorry. I'll go to Louis from Montreal. I absolutely love the woman at the end of Donahue who sat through the entire show, and when she had the opportunity to ask a question, she asked, why would anyone want to get into wrestling anyway? It is an impure art form, and it just looks sleazy.
Next up, we go to
Chris in Ottawa.
Chris in Ottawa. Hey, guys, forget the Montreal screw job. Mr. McMahon was born on Donahue. If only Raw today had what this show had. It was fast, had strong crowd reactions, audience participation. Phil Donahue clearly loves to hear himself talk, but he sure had a lot of facts at his disposal. He must have been a big fan of the business, or he's a quick study with a great staff. Except for that part about the WWF doing bigger business than the NFL. I really got a kick out of Bruno Behring, that kid who was smartened up to the business. Bruno doesn't lay down for anybody. Billy Graham came across like a total whack job. He witnessed oral sexual acts and believed that Hulk Hogan was guilty of child molestation of the mind. I did some additional research, and as it turns out, Murray Hodgson, who appeared to get the upper hand on Vince on this show, made similar accusations towards another past employer with another civil suit, with the judge in that case calling Hodgson a habitual liar. When Hodgson's lawyer divorced him, he recused himself from the case against the WWF and pretty much died after that. 92 is a year of great change in America, both in wrestling and in music. And he makes a request for the song at the end.
Tony Sackage, this show is a classic. It's weird to see how the formats of the talk shows have changed since this era, too. The best thing is, this isn't even the first appearance of wrestling on Donahue, as he did an AWA show with wrestling going on during the interview in the early 80s. Apparently, in 92, gay sexual advances were seen as hilarious by the crowd, too. Times have changed. I remember hearing Meltzer talk about how the only reason Vince even appeared was that there was a swerve planned by Vince. One of the accusers, who was in the audience with Linda, prepared to come forward, which is what John discussed. Murray Hodgson is actually a somewhat successful club owner here in Detroit area, which is good because apparently this was one of his last television appearances. I do think that the WBF pay-per-view is something Review Away needs to review soon. He owned Vince, though, which can't be said for many people. Vince's facial expressions throughout the interview, whenever he is confronted with something, are priceless. Billy Graham comes across like a loudmouth idiot who confirms every wrestling stereotype, which is unfortunate. I highly recommend the Larry King episode from this era and the A Current Affair piece, too.
From there, we go on to Paul Ellett. It really is incredible, the perception of homosexuality just 20 years ago, with the audience laughing along like sexual harassment of this kind was something that belonged in a Carry-On film. Not that much would separate the people who sit in the crowd of these tapings from trained SEALs. Despite saying they weren't treating this matter trivially, this was all they did, with the woman at the end who referred to wrestling as tacky pretty much summing up how the audience generally saw all of this. It was a case of a serious subject like sexual harassment being treated in an inappropriate and sensationalistic arena simply for ratings, which is ironic given the usually wacky nature of wrestling, which employs similar audience baiting tactics like mentioning the city's name to get a cheap pop or easy heat. I didn't think I would be saying this ever, but Vince was one of the more understated and level-headed people, though not surprising given his position. Murray / Ross Geller came across as quite the opportunist and aggressive. While Barry O, long-haired Jason Siegel, might as well have been holding Donahue's hand. He was being led through his answers so much. Billy Graham could have made more of an effort in what he wore for the show and was too hyperbolic in his comparison to child molestation. It's incredible that a company like WWFE can survive so much bad publicity and still continue to be successful, though as a fan, it's a relief. What would it take to bring down this company? I would like to hear from Dave, who resembled Morbius from the Spider-Man cartoon series, as to what his relationship and interactions with Vince have been like over the years. Also, would John or Way go on a TV show now if asked as a wrestling expert? Would you go on, Way?
I don't know if I would. I think you would.
Yeah.
I think you'd make a great expert. is what I mean.
Oh, well, thank you, Wei. Yeah. I don't think I would have wanted to have been part of Phil Donahue at this point. Yeah. I'm not a fan of these circus shows.
Mark, who's aged 21, he informs us, from Birmingham, England, got into wrestling again a few months back after a six-year absence, although I kept tabs on what was going on and kept up to date on Botchamanias, and I found your podcast and I've been hooked ever since. I feel like I've learned an unnecessary amount of information about the business. I wish I'd had this interest in maths or chemistry. Oh well. He goes on to talk about Donahue first. I knew a bit about the drug scandal already before I watched this, although I had no idea the sex scandal was actually discussed openly on television like this. It really shows how much has changed socially since '92. I felt weird every time the audience laughed at any mention of male sexual abuse. I thought Vince held his own as well, especially in a difficult position he found himself in. The audience was always going to be against him. Hodgson came off as an unlikable arsehole. His argument with Vince was great, but I felt Vince had the better mic skills when it came down to it. I couldn't help but feel like Patterson was being targeted because of his sexuality by a group of bitter ex-employees who had been stepped on by the mighty WWF and were seeking revenge. Orton seemed legit, everything he said was passionate, and he came across as a decent guy. I can't even remember the third guy's name. When they brought everyone else on the stage and the show went on a bit off the rails, too many cooks in the kitchen, and it came off badly organized and rushed. I'd rather have seen Hodgson versus McMahon Part 2. I had no idea what Graham was talking about. He's seen someone was forcing a kid to perform oral sex on them, but he's not actually seen it. I would have liked to see more of Bruno and Vince talking with or without the audience or the guys on stage shouting out in every silent space. By the way, who was the idiot at the end who asked, isn't wrestling fixed anyway? What was her point? Yeah, it's fixed, so let them... Oh, man. Oh, gross. Okay. Video number two. I won't bother talking about it. Just seemed like they were angry at the WWF for not participating in the show, which automatically made me take everything they said with a pinch of salt.
Billy Graham's book, which came out in 2006, Tangled Ropes. This is just a preview of the book.
Oh, thanks for doing that research.
It's the steroid trial of Dr. George Sahorian and subsequent federal case against Vince McMahon for distribution where the truth is truly laid out. Graham explains his motives for helping the prosecution against his old employer and is deeply sorry for some of the lies he spouted in the heat of the moment, especially in regards to Pat Patterson.
In the heat of the moment? This was a long moment to keep up those lies.
So, I mean, that certainly disregards the story involving Pat grabbing a child, Jesus. Which probably the lowest kind of lie you can ever tell.
Yeah, poor guy. Well, I don't know, man. It's a shitty situation.
Trent from Texas. I love seeing the real Vince McMahon when he is forced to be on the defense. He never backs down and seems ready to throw down at any minute. If this show took place in 1999, Vince and Murray Hodgson would have been encouraged to go at it for real. After being trained to expect that after watching daytime talk shows for the last 15 years, it almost seemed out of place and odd that it didn't get physical. Unfortunately, probably the biggest lie throughout this program was that the WWF made $1.7 billion in revenue in 1990. Surely this cannot be close to the truth and would love your personal feed. Oh, yes, we discussed that. It's not a 25 million. I don't think us as wrestling fans ever stand back and realize how sleazy the wrestling business history truly is at times. When there are more serious problems in your industry than rampant gay sexual harassment of teenagers in your industry, that speaks volumes to how scummy it truly is. On a side note, I don't think anyone has spoken about Miss Elizabeth in the crowd. Also, if you look in the audience, most of the women were dressed up like 90s star Blossom. Okay. Also, on the Geraldo piece, the cream team moniker given to the young men who had to perform sexual favors in order for a job was the tipping point for me amongst all the stories of gay sexual harassment against teenage boys. I found this to be a very serious and sad look at the pro wrestling industry and was hoping for a more goofy and fun depiction of wrestling on a talk show. I didn't really feel anybody embarrassed themselves and was outlandish enough. Still, though, very compelling and great watch for any wrestling fan. You don't have to read it, but if you are going to review a talk show about wrestling that is more fun and review-friendly, then the best possible option is an episode of the Morton Downey Jr. Show on Wrestling, where David Schultz and Captain Lou hysterically protect the business as well as spew racist and homophobic remarks.
Okay.
I've seen that show. It is not wrestling in its greatest light either.
Mark McKenzie. The Donahue Show was a little better than Geraldo, though I found Donahue to be an awful host. He was constantly interrupting and yelling over people's points, and I'm sure based on that, since I am gay, but considering the seriousness of the topic of sexual harassment and pedophilia, I don't think it was necessary for Donahue to use a bunch of cheap gay jokes for cheap laughs. Vince came off a lot better than I expected. Don't get me wrong, he seemed really sleazy, but he did make a few decent points, though I don't believe for a second that he knew as little as he claims. Billy Graham came off as an asshole and an idiot, but it seems like he's done that professionally since he stopped wrestling. I don't think anyone comes off worse in this than Murray Hodgson. I thought he was a liar right from the start. Needless to say, I wasn't surprised when I googled him and found out his charges against Pat Patterson were dropped and his lawyer actually referred to him as a lifelong con man. Honestly, outside of Meltzer and Bruno, I'd argue no one on this comes off particularly well. Both were the most well-reasoned arguments there were. I thought most everyone else came off terribly, including the idiots in the crowd. It's always eye-opening when the seedy underbelly of wrestling is exposed. Being gay myself, none of this surprises me. For me to find out that a business composed mainly of overly macho men has, at any point, had some kind of gay sex scandal does not surprise me. The fact that it's so homophobic kind of helps nail that point home to me. One thing, though, I would argue that sexual harassment and pedophilia are both serious enough charges that the gay part of them shouldn't really play that much a factor into it, but I guess you lose out on a whole lot of easy jokes that way.
One of the people I do feel that, I thought did come off fine was Barry Orton. I found the guy, you know, maybe not the most seasonally trained performer, but someone that, he came across to me as someone that really wanted to be factual in what he stated and was not, he seemed like someone that was, I thought came across fine on the show. We go on to Carmine. Before I get too deep into feedback, I have three words. Dave Meltzer's hair. Donahue and Geraldo are both such sensationalistic hacks. They both fit in perfectly in the pro wrestling world as obnoxious managers of GMs. One of the interesting things about WWE is that it's one of the few companies that actually became more scrupulous as it grew into a massive corporate empire. It was kind of troubling the way some people acted as if the problem was homosexuality in and of itself rather than the workplace sexual harassment. I wonder what Barry Orton thinks of the success and the pair of wellness violations his nephew Randy has acquired over the past 10 or so years. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Randy also have some sexual harassment allegations at some point a few years back? I can't imagine what Thanksgiving dinner conversations must be like at the Orton house. Anyway, that is his feedback. Mm-hmm. In terms of sexual harassment, I mean, there were incidents involving Randy Orton, but I think sexual harassment would be a stretch.
Benno from Liverpool, UK. I happened across the Donahue show a few months back, and after seeing it, my immediate thought was that it would make a great episode of Review Away. I was surprised it wasn't already on the list, so I suggested it and actually cheered it out loud last week when you guys finally picked it on the air. I was in work, though, at the time, and the people around me seemed less than amused. Anyway, the show itself was highly entertaining. I couldn't believe the rampant homophobia and how lighthearted such a serious topic was treated. That said, there were numerous funny moments. Vince telling Murray Hodgson how terrible he was a highlight, and was how uncomfortable Vince looked sat next to Dave Meltzer, who seemed to be the lone sane member of the panel. I did feel bad for Barry O, who came across quite well, but Murray Hodgson came across like a daytime soap villain, and the more you read about him, the less his side of the accusation seemed true. Overall, it was an enjoyable show and an interesting snapshot of that period.
All right, that's going to finish us up for feedback this week. So quite a heavy topic to go through, Mr. Ting.
Yeah.
So that is going to wrap us up, everybody. Thanks for those of you that did leave feedback for us. And now we will look ahead to next week, Wei, where we will get back to reviewing wrestling.
Can we actually maybe laugh next week, or is this going to be another downer?
No, I agree, Wei. I think we all want to laugh. So, you know, that does tip the scales towards a WCW event.
Oh.
So we are going to go back to Super Brawl 3 from 1993, featuring Sting and Vader, the White Castle of Fear, a legendary shitty WCW gimmick.
The White Castle of Fear. Like, are they fighting for burgers?
We are going to have to find out, won't we?
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Next week, WCW Super Brawl 3 will be reviewed on this show. Maybe we can find Cheatham, the midget, that was incorporated for some of these commercials.
Oh, wow. There are commercials.
Yeah. Cheatham the Midget. I don't even know if he was in that ad or not. But anyway, I've never seen this event, so I'm going to enjoy going back and watching this. So next week, Super Brawl 3 coming at you live on Review Away. In the meantime, though, folks, you can download The Law from Sunday night, running through the Elimination Chamber, Review a Raw from Monday night as well. We got the MMA report coming this week, Review an Impact. And Mr. Ting, we need some music to go on out here. When you say...
Jesus. How do you pick a song for
well,
this?
Well, let's... when you hear White Castle of Fear, maybe make it more designed towards that.
Shouldn't you save that for next week?
I guess so. Okay, well, let's pick a...
Somebody in our request, somebody in the feedback had a request for a song by Pavement.
Okay, do you want to go out with... what's the Geraldo theme song?
Oh, okay. That's not much of a song.
No, it's not really. Okay, we'll go out with Pavement.
Yeah,
we'll
let's take this guy's request. I've lost it.
Yeah, whatever the song's called. We'll go out with that. That is all for us, everyone. You can give us a follow at Way0937, at Law Radio, and you can go to Live Audio Wrestling as Conduit for Sale by Pavement takes us out here on Review Away.